You are listening to episode number 193 of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, after a week hiatus, you are listening to yet another spectacular edition of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. If you wish me a happy birthday last week, I really appreciate it. I had a great birthday. I'm 25 years old now. I'm a quarter of a century old. It's awesome. Hope you had a great birthday if it was your birthday, too. I am the host, if you're not aware, Ben, a.k.a. the marvelous Iggy, suck it, Iggy Azalea. Joining me is my wonderful co-stars, Mr. Brian Powers. Brian?
Yeah, Iggy didn't even win one Grammy. What you got to say about that?
I did it. I was robbed.
No, not you. The other
Iggy. Oh, see when... Okay.
Oh, and if I may say so, Super Bowl champs! What up?
I can hear Brian screaming all the way.
Oh, boy, did I scream. I screamed like a little girl. It was amazing.
It's been 10 years. All right, and joining me also from the city of New York, where the New York Knicks owner is a complete asshole, Taser, welcome to the show.
Yes! Let's hear it for New York City, the city of assholes. Woohoo!
And the city that gets no fucking snow, you fucking assholes.
Hey, don't hate, because I will hate.
No, see, what you don't know,
okay, so I would
Taser,
have no
what
problem.
You don't know, Brian, is Taser put in the Konami code so snow doesn't come his way.
No. What you don't understand is I broke all of Brian's snow shoveling stuff.
I am sitting here playing life on hardcore mode, sitting on 60 plus inches of snow total, and you're just over there cheating your way. Fuck you.
Yes. Yeah, I know you want to, but no thank you. I'm not into dudes.
All right. Well, we are the Mighty Warriors Team Marvel Podcast.
Before I say anything, dude, happy birthday.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I didn't wish you happy birthday on the boards, but happy birthday there, pal.
Thank you. Didn't even do it on Twitter either.
I'm for a quarter-life crisis.
Happy birthday.
Hey, I had a great birthday.
Happy birthday, dude.
I can stop playing Chrono Trigger anytime I want. I can stop. I'm not playing it right now. In case you haven't heard, we are the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. We are a podcast dedicated to all things Marvel-related. And because we're dedicated to all things Marvel-related, let's kick things off right away. Brian, apparently we got a new Avengers book coming out this summer. Let the folks know what it is in case they don't watch The View on daytime television.
Yeah, that was another thing. When did The View become the go-to spot for Marvel to announce all their shit?
Because apparently The View gets a lot of female viewers, apparently. I don't know. I don't watch The View.
Restated right. Joke is restated.
Is it a joke? Indeed. I was being serious.
Nah, Bri-Bri did, though.
Oh.
What?
Just saying. What? He said it before.
What did I say?
When did The View become the news arm?
If that's in response to the Thor thing, I didn't mean it then, but this is the serious trend happening. This is the second big announcement.
How is two times in a row happening a trend? That's just a coincidence.
Same person? Okay. Lies. Lies!
What if? Look, okay. Jesus Christ.
Snowboy.
I can't believe I wanted to come back on this podcast. So... Marvel Comics is putting out an all-female team of Avengers titled The A-Force, which I don't really get. We talked about this before. I don't really know why they're calling it A-Force as opposed to Avengers.
Well, I mean, if you can find them, you know.
If you're in trouble, if no one else can help, and if you can find them.
If the X-Men, Fantastic Four, the Inhumans, and the Defenders can't, if they're nowhere around, and you can find A-Force, maybe they'll help you.
Wow, you go to the Defenders before you go to the A-Force? That's some low-tier quality.
Oh, when you're called A-Force, you know, you're not going to, like, you're just going to, you're gonna look up Great Lakes Avengers before you look up A-Force. Let's be real here.
Yeah.
What we're getting at is...
Great Lakes Avengers, wow, that's
we're getting,
cool. Hey, look, at least they have Squirrel Girl.
What we're getting at is this, because I know if we get somebody who's listening to this, look, it's a fine concept, you know, it's no different than they relaunched X-Men with the all-female team, which I bought and read for a couple of issues until and got a little dull. Why is it not just called The Avengers?
How about Vagina Power?
You know, it's like, you're like, to me, I'm not saying, like, it just seems like they're trying to push a different brand, whatever. To me, just call them The Avengers. That's what they are, right? You know, like, I have no problem with the team as a concept. They have some of my favorite characters. Do we know who's officially on the team, Brian?
We do. Some of the ones that are spearheading the team are She-Hulk, Dazzler, Medusa, and a character named Nico Minoru, who I have no idea who that is.
Say who
that's
code name
she's
is?
From Runaways.
No, that's what she's billed as in the press.
Okay, but apparently...
Yeah, that's the chick in the black dress on the lower right side.
The kind of goth-looking chick?
Yeah, underneath Scarlet Witch, I think that's her.
Is Scarlet Witch on this team?
I don't know. They didn't say
that. Probably she has a vagina.
They just mentioned those four as the main headliners.
Okay. It's going to interchangeable, right?
Yeah, I think it's going to have like a Heroes for Hire vibe, which if that says anything about the fate of this book, thank God.
Which is exactly what I think they should have called this, if we're going to be honest. If they're not going to use Avengers in the name, then they should have just titled this Heroes for Hire and done this, you know? Which I wouldn't have had a problem with.
Yeah, but it's like again, I have no problem with this book as a concept. It's great. You know, some of my favorite characters could be in this book, you know. get some lower level female characters who don't get love, you know, not I don't just want to see the She-Hulk.
They have Jubilee, so.
Well, no, yeah, that's true. Well, Vampire Jubilee. But like, I'm talking about like get some characters.
Hellcats on the list too. I don't know.
Get some
They got Vindicator.
Get some.
I know, lower, right? I was gonna say Vindicator, but holy shit!
I would get some.
Lower... Oh, they got the Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds chick from the Runaways there.
Firestar, yes,
yeah, she's on there.
Okay, she better be on this. What I'm saying is, after
Janet Victor... Van Dyne is in this series, apparently. Yeah, Elektra's in this series.
Woohoo! Phoenix is back.
Woo, hey,
Phoenix.
Rescue's in this one.
Yes, she is.
And Spider-Gwen.
Okay.
It's Black than Marvel. Up there in the top left corner.
You mean Monica Rambeau something?
Yeah, Rambo. Black America. I mean, you know, Black to Marvel, whatever.
Okay, what I'm saying is this, that use it to not just spotlights on the Captain Marvels, the Scarlet Witches, the She-Hulks, you know, the ones people generally know, and just, you know, have them team up with, like, a lesser-known female character, or make new ones. Heck, use this book to make new ones. I'm just bothered by the name A-Force. It just doesn't roll off the tongue.
It really doesn't. Not even like X-Force. X-Force.
It rolls off the tongue like... if you get them one by one privately in a bedroom and then do stuff.
No, you got to find it. You got to climb through and you got to find it and then you have to start.
You have to tease it. Flick it a little.
I'm just like...
You got to go saying... to Chef, voiced by Isaac Hayes, to ask where to find it. It's really complex.
I'm just saying I really wish Marvel would have just called them Avengers.
Like, yeah,
just adjectiveless Avengers. Like, there's no reason for it to not call them that. Like, to me, it does the book a bit a disservice because you're gonna have people pass over it constantly because your comic readers or even people who just know Avengers, their minds are trained for look for Avengers. And granted, there's gonna be Uncanny, all new Avengers, whatever. But you're gonna look for Avengers. And
I think, you know what it is? I think because there's a couple of mutants on this team, and because we have X-Force, and because there's a lot of characters who've been Avengers,
they're extended.
It's a combination of both names, X-Force, Avengers, A-Force, because they use the A. And look, it's got the circular thing from
the... What has the logo?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It has the logo. Force. So yeah. It's a combination. As a combination, it sucks. I agree with you 100%. I'm just saying, I think that's where this comes from.
It's a dumb thing.
Fails.
It's dumb. It just
it is.
Look, yeah, look, it doesn't come out to the summer. Hopefully, Marvel will change the name to just Avengers. Like, you know, not like nothing derogatory towards women. Just Avengers. They're all Avengers, or at least Avengers at one point, or characters who may or may not should have been deserved to be part of the Avengers at some point.
And, you know, that would make for an excellent – this image is an excellent poster. Having Avengers at the bottom would – that wins right there, you know?
It's validation of them not having to be shoved off into some, you know, sub-team, you know? I mean, I'm not one that's saying these women are at all, like, you know, I'm not that guy. But this sort of, like, if you just call them Avengers, it says a lot more about them than just A-Force.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're Avengers, you know. There's no need for them to be, like, C-Class or, you know, the
I know.
Team.
Like, I mean, if X-Force is the Black Ops team of the X-Men.
I think your connections to X-Force are a little not there because it's not what that book's going to be about, but I just don't think A-Force is a name hits. I just don't think...
I mean, don't get me wrong. Black Ops Dazzler would be interesting to see.
See, I don't think we're not going to get Black Ops. These are just going to be...
I'm just happy he's got Dazzler.
These are going to be
superheroes.
Dude,
can I just say that they put her in this poster in full disco gear and roller shoes?
Well,
roller skates on right now.
I don't think...
Retro.
That image is basically sort of... iconic representations of those characters
What iconic? That was never iconic. Disco Dazzler was never iconic.
More people recognize Disco Dazzler than anybody else. Be real here. I'm talking about in terms of what
if they recognize her at all.
Most people
No, they would recognize her. She's been around invisible long enough that people would.
Like I'm looking at this image. They show Spider-Woman not in her new costume, Jean Grey in the Phoenix costume, Scarlet Witch with her classic headband.
Yeah,
Captain Marvel is in her brand new costume.
Because that's been around for at least 2 years.
And
that's
Spider-Gwen.
The look and that's the look that they're pushing. And Spider-Gwen is a thing that has been pushing recently. Whereas Spider-Woman's costume hasn't even come out yet, so this promotional image was probably done before that.
They might just
Rogue.
And put Dazzler back in her original costume.
This image is really just a promotional image of these characters at their most...
Seen issue the first.
No, what I'm saying...
So,
I'm
saying. Might do it for this.
No, and what I'm saying they might not is that this is just a visual representation of what they see at what their women at their either most iconic or what they want to push currently. Because this... Otherwise, Spider-Woman would be in a new costume and she's not. And Rogue is Rogue is in her 90s Jim Lee costume. And Storm looks more like in her current Astonishing X-Men. It's just... You know, whatever. I think it's just a promotional image and not an indication of who's main to be on the roster, and that's all it is. It's just a promotional image. Like Elektra's
I don't think that they would put in characters who they have no intention on being in the roster. I don't think they would bother
it. I think this is just a promotional image to get people to talk.
Hmm?
I don't think this is an indication of who's the core roster or who's going to be. I think it's going to be a fluctuating book, and Avengers Force is dumb. And, I mean, come on, look, you have Rogue's 90s X-Men on right there.
That's Lightspeed. Top right corner, Lightspeed from Power Pack. That's who that is.
But I mean, I just say look at Rogue in her current. That's not how Rogue looks like right now. She looks nothing like that. And Spider-Woman doesn't have that costume. And Jean Grey's dead. You know, or at least current Jean Grey is dead. Or at least,
The older one.
The older one is dead, you know?
For now.
Yeah, I mean...
So Moondragon, for that matter.
Exactly. So, again, this is all just, like, where's Sue Storm, though? Is she in this image?
No.
Isn't Sue Storm in this image?
Because they're putting the kibosh on the Fantastic Four, dude.
If that's the case, Sue Storm should have been in this book. Sue Storm should be in this book.
She was an Avenger at one point. So.
Well, even if it doesn't matter, she's one of the most iconic women in all of Marvel Comics.
Yeah, and if they're going to throw all those X-Men characters, they could at least throw Sue Storm.
Like when you think, like, I mean, they got it right with Storm and, and Jean Grey in terms of iconic X-Men women. But, like, it's just odd looking at it is that there's no...
And there's no Polaris.
Yeah.
Who?
Polaris. Well, not daughter of Magneto.
Actually, yeah, she is a daughter.
At this point, she's the only daughter.
That's true.
Wasn't there.
All right. I think we ran a little too long on this. Let's move on to some of the things. Let us know what you think about A-Force and the idea of the team, and if you're going to buy it or not. So, we got trailers.
We do. We got them.
Teaser.
We had teaser trailers. Brian, Daredevil trailer, up. What did you think?
I thought it was promising. I'll say that. I thought it looked very promising. It seems to know what story it wants to tell just based on what we've seen. It obviously is telling, like you saw Frank Miller's his take on Matt Murdock's early days and you know, finding his footing, so to speak, as Daredevil.
That quote unquote costume he's wearing is straight out of the Man Without Fear, the origin story, the official origin story of Daredevil.
I could go on about the costume in and of itself, but I won't here. Suffice to say that this trailer looks to be very direction oriented. It like I said, it knows what story it wants to tell and how to tell it. It looks to have a very well-rounded cast who, I'm not going to say that they're doing their jobs well because we haven't seen anything with them in yet, but Charlie Cox, I think, does very well with Matt Murdock.
Cox!
From the brief bit we've seen of him. And that one shot of the back of the Kingpin has me terrified of him already, so that was great. But I am stoked for it. I'm excited. I cannot wait for this series. I'm gonna binge watch it the day it drops, and you can't stop me.
Me too.
No, you can't.
Me too. I'm excited. My Daredevil boner got very excited when I saw it.
Right?
It very much captures the moody feeling.
It was the boner without fear of showing itself.
It very captured the very essence of the not classic Daredevil, because that would be the 60s stuff, but like the Frank Miller and the Bendis run. I'm gonna just say Frank Miller because Bendis basically took Frank Miller's idea and just made up to date it a little bit. So it basically is taking the core idea of what Miller did and adapting it. You know, I don't like the costume, but what can you do? It does look like it's gonna be a really interesting show, and I can't wait to binge watch it. We got a glimpse of the Kingpin, which I thought was cool. But you know, I have high expectations for this. I have supremely high expectations. I really did like that they, you know, focused in on a lot of the Catholic stuff. That was interesting, and then how they perceive sort of, you know, sound. How he perceived sound was cool. And like they I don't know if they had the budget to do the whole sonar shit. Hopefully we'll see sonar stuff, but I like that how, like, if you listen to headphones, the audio actually leans to wherever Matt Murdock's listening, so it's pretty cool that way.
Right? That was trippy, wasn't it? I thought it was, like, messing up for a second. I'm like, oh, shit.
No, that's cool. So I look forward to see what they do. I'm really excited for Daredevil. This should be a really good binge watching. I'm not even going to go to work that weekend. Like, I'm watching Daredevil.
No, I'm sick. I was struck by a truck and now I'm blind due to radioactive material, so I won't be in today. I'll see you tomorrow. Bye.
Did you see those giant turtles come out of the sewer?
Oh my god, those giant turtles. No one believes me, but they were there, man. They were there.
All right, Taser, what'd you think of it?
He's not wearing a red suit.
Oh, for God's sake.
I wanted a red suit.
But
I did like everything else as it was presented. It looked dark, moody. It looked like a man who... grim and gritty, you know, grim dark. Definitely looked grim.
I mean, the Frank Miller stuff is pretty grim, dark Daredevil. I mean,
Well, no. I understand. It didn't look too superhero-y, you know? It didn't look like there'd be a whole lot of powers being seen or whatever. Although I did like the one part where he went up to the door and didn't just put his hands on it and then was like, okay, I done heard everything I needed to do. Let me go in there and do whatever. It definitely had my attention, so yeah, I'll bootleg that because I don't have a Netflix account. I will definitely check that out when it comes out, and I don't know if I'll do like you guys and call in sick to watch the whole thing at once, but I'll probably do it over the weekend because, you know, it's the weekend. I want to see it. You know, I want to see what they do.
But if we don't binge watch it, we'll lose our nerd cred.
Admittedly, I'm more interested in seeing the Jessica Jones and Luke Cage stuff.
Hey,
it's not freaking Cruise, but yeah, no, I want to see this and I want to see what they do. So, it has my attention and it'll get my time.
Forgive me, Father, if I have sinned. All right, that's okay. So that's the trailer. It's not very much you can go off of him. He's wearing khaki pants. I did think his batons looked a little too big. In the brief shot you got them, they looked a little too big. But that could just be from that shot. Who knows? But he is using batons, and we got a shot of stick. Stick!
Yeah. I admittedly, I was kind of shocked to see that. I was like, holy crap, he's in this. Oh, fizzle sticks. I want to check that out.
All right, so let us know what you thought of the Daredevil trailer, teaser trailer, and then not that much longer till it comes out, 3 months. And then once it's out, all of it's out. So that's
actually this point's only 2 months.
Yeah, 2 months. No, yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right. April. I thought it came out in May for some reason.
No, they moved. I think they announced it for me. They pushed it back to April.
Oh, that's awesome. Pushed it up to April, you mean? Okay. We've been shitting on this second trailer. Before it even happened. And,
speaking of not having a lot to go off of.
I had no idea this was coming out, but then I remembered the movie does come out in August. So we finally got our first look. Brian, shut your mouth. You get your turn. We finally got our first look at the FF movie, as I'm calling it. And, you know, I will say this because I want to try to be somewhat positive. I was surprised it did not look like shaky cam. It actually looked like somebody actually was holding a camera in a professional way, on dollies and professionally. It did look like that. So I hope that's like that for the whole movie. What I really noticed about this is that they are not treating this like a superhero movie. They are treating this like a sci-fi movie, and more so evident with that potential dimensional gateway at the very end of it.
Yeah.
Which the trailer, I'm not going to lie, was very meh. It was very superhero. Something tragic is happening. Something will change the world. You will change the world. We got shots of, you know, Johnny Storm, Reed Richards, Ben Grimm, who I thought was Josh Gad, but I guess not.
He was rumored for the role at one point.
Okay. And Sue Storm, we got shots of them. No shots of Doom, I don't believe. And no shots of anybody else. We got glimpses of the costumes, which are not costumes, which is, you know, they're gonna go completely away from that. Which, you know, just gonna bring this out. The Fantastic Four, when they first debuted, didn't have costumes. They were first couple of issues.
It was spacesuits.
They were just. Well, no, I'm just saying they were just in street clothes for the first couple of times for a bit. Then they got the real things. But then these new ones are basically sort of like basically spacesuits, with no color scheme, just bland. You know what I got from this trailer? Visually, Man of Steel, like color palette wise, and just how
bland and boring.
Well, not saturated, but yeah, the general idea. What I'll say this is that I'm not sold on it. I am intrigued because of that dimensional portal thing. And while this may not be a good superhero movie, if this turns out to be a interesting sci-fi movie with four lead characters who happen to have superpowers, okay. Again, I was more than relieved to see that the camera was steadier than anything else. So I'm done. Brian, you have the table.
Right. I'll preface this with the things I liked about it, if that's all right with you. The trailer did strike me as being similar to Man of Steel, but it also struck me as having almost a Nolan-esque vibe to it, you know, which, you know, can't hurt, I guess. Miles Teller being Reed Richards, I mean, in the time between him being announced and him being made this guy, I could maybe buy him as a young-ish Reed Richards, you know. I've read Ultimate Fantastic Four. I enjoyed Ultimate Reed Richards as a young super genius, but I don't know. I'm still iffy on everybody else, especially Jamie Bell as supposedly Ben Grimm, which is a no thank you. The ending scene ripped off Mass Effect 3, one of my favorite video games of all time, so that's good. Yeah, that's good.
Okay, I'm a hardcore Mass Effect nut as anybody, and I didn't fucking get that at all.
You didn't?
No, I didn't. Unlike you, I don't see unlike you and other people, I don't see other media and other shit until it's pointed out.
Yep.
And then I can't see what you guys are asking.
So anyway, the stuff I did not like. We didn't cover it because we don't cover DC movies here, the Distinguished Competition, so to speak. But when I saw the Man of Steel, you know, trailer and stuff, you know, the more dark stuff was not lost on me. As Taser said, it was very sort of bland looking and, you know, that sort of thing. And now this trailer took me to a place where I heard in the back of my head a line delivered by Ben Affleck, of all people, which if you, you know, delivered to Jay and Silent Bob. Well, look at these morose motherfuckers. Smells like someone shit in their cereal. I'm just like, dude. Now, look, I'm a fan of the dark and gritty, but even I have my limits. I mean, and granted, maybe I'm being a little bit biased because I didn't have high hopes for this movie to begin with, and maybe I'm being a bit harsher on this movie, where I wouldn't be harsher on other movies that have this stuff. Like, Man of Steel wasn't as hard on it, even though the movie plotline was kind of ugh. That being said, god damn, man. I mean, the Fantastic Four is, I don't want to say fantastic, because that comes up as sounding maybe too cheesy, but, and then this isn't going to sound any better, but it's fucking, you know, whimsical and out there and weird, and, you know, it's a Fantastic Four. They fight creatures called Cthulhu and Badoosh and, you know, Cockknocker. I don't know. It fights these larger-than-life monsters and things of that sort, and it's just, I didn't get that, you know? And obviously they're going with a different direction. Obviously it's not what they want to do. Fine. Just don't expect me to like your movie and don't expect me to see it. That's all I'm saying.
You're going to see it. You're contractually obligated because you work for this podcast.
Fine.
You're going to see the fucking movie.
It is under protest.
You're going to see the fucking
movie. Under formal protest. Taser, you go.
I have to admit, I did like how the teaser presented itself. I'm glad that it doesn't look, you know, I don't know how much of the actual movie will have, but I didn't see any of the home video shaky cam thing going on, so that tells me this movie will, if anything, be something like Blair Witch, although probably less shaky cam than, you know, less that than the other, you know, traditional storytelling elements. The look of it, it tried to play itself as big and deep and serious, you know, something mysterious and, you know, exactly, something is coming, beware, all of that stuff, you know, to kind of pull you in, sit you on the edge of your seat so you can, you know, be enveloped by whatever unfolds before you. And I kind of dug that feeling, but I also know, you know, kind of, I know where this is coming from. I do kind of know a little bit of what to expect. And I realize that this, what they're doing here is not for me because of that. So I can only hope that when, you know, when the movie is released, and, you know, I'm going to go see it because I have to, you know, I am that fanboy. I have to go see it just for my own edification and, you know, do it for the show. But it doesn't look like something I don't want to see. I didn't get anything negative.
You didn't get the Guardians of the Galaxy revulsion.
No, I didn't. But although I didn't get that from seeing the trailer, unlike Guardians of the Galaxy, where I saw the trailer and was like, oh my god, no, I didn't get anything like that from here. So that's a good thing. Whether that continues when I actually see the movie, it's another thing entirely. But so far, I'm good. You know, I'm okay. I don't think John will be so, but we'll find that out when he comes back, hopefully next show, and, you know, gives us his opinion. And but, you know, yeah, that's where I'm at. I want to see this. The trailer didn't look bad to me, so, You know, I'm on board to check it out.
What do you think was? What do you think's on the opposite of that sort of dimensional portal thing?
Because no, that's the negative zone.
A better Fantastic Four movie.
No, but this, you know, this is coming from
who is that?
No, that's I know that's exactly where it is, and I was admittedly surprised to see that familiar structure. Be there.
Nah, I wasn't. Because
no, I was.
Remember, because
the whole trailer presents itself as grounded as fuck, and then you see something like that,
right?
Oh, so
well, think about it, Stargate. You know, the Fantastic Four have always been about, at least partly about the exploration of.
True, but you know, you have to give and take with what we've covered and what we saw and what I saw in the trailer is that this. I thought this movie was gonna be grounded as fuck. So when I see that, I'm thinking, oh.
Well, I'll put it this way: they weren't going to have Reed Richards do something for the military, or they weren't going to have him build a rocket to whatever.
No, not that. Not
you know?
That. What
so,
I'm saying is,
you know, they wanted to do something that was nice and safe, quote unquote. So why not have portal to wherever? You know,
I thought they were on Mount Doom. They were on Mount Doom with the way that background was.
Yeah, see, Doom.
No, not Doom. Mount Doom, like the location.
Oh, okay.
Like, look, it's gray skies, dark skies with like gravel everywhere, fire. It looks like they're on Mount Doom. They're on location for Lord of the Rings 4.
Right.
I'm just saying, I personally did not expect to see that structure in the trailer, and that made me go, okay, you have me interested.
Needs more Michael Chiklis.
Oh, get over
I
yourself.
Can agree with that.
I did like the thing a little bit. He's brown though in this, isn't he? He's gray. He's not gonna be orange.
What?
Yeah. He looked orange. He didn't look orange.
He's fucking Rock Slide from fucking X-Men, dude. That's who he is. Ugh. Hate everything.
All right, when the movie comes out and you love it, I'm gonna just play this over. I'm gonna edit this out.
Impossible.
No, it's gonna happen. And then I'm gonna play this clip over right before you speak, and then it's gonna be like, yeah. All right, so anything else to say about the FF trailer, teaser trailer?
I've already said needs more Michael Chiklis. If we don't get like a Chris Evans cameo, I'll be supremely upset.
Why would Chris Evans do a cameo? He's contract. He probably can't.
Yeah. I'm just
look. If you really want, you don't have to go to the movies. You can just rewatch. You can just do a commentary by yourself over Fantastic Four.
No. You know what we'll do? We'll let him do that that very first Fantastic Four movie from 1994.
Yeah. All right. Well,
damn it, Taser.
Let us know what you think of the Fantastic Four movie. Obviously, I don't think
Roger Corman for the win.
I thought I was going to be hating this as much as I was, but I was actually generally interested. Despite that the first half to me was really generic and Man of Steelish, but that last shot really kind of made me go, Okay. Also, this apparently is supposed to be in the same world as the X-Men, so I really want to see if they tie any X-Men Easter eggs. All right. Well, let's go on to individual reviews. I'm going, once again, the little darling that could, Miss Marvel, number 11. It's been a while since an issue came out. This sort of wraps up the Inventor storyline. And really the first page sort of sums up why I love this book, in that the villain's giving his stupid speech, and like Kamala gives like tells her what she thinks about him, and basically she says, and at the end of it all she goes, I think you're a bird. Just like points at him, grows big at him, and just comically just says, I think you're a bird, and like he gets mad he's not a bird. And it turns into, this is like Kamala's first big superhero fight. And it was fun to see her, a rookie, try to fight her way against this mad inventor, and she almost, you know, relatively closely died, being squished. But she escapes luckily, and the inventor gets away and everything, and it all wraps up pretty generically. But it's the human interactions, it's the interactions, it's the dialogue, and just the beautiful art that's in this. The very cartoony art that really sells me on the series, especially there's a whole page of her shrinking down into the machine, and you'd follow her as she sort of like how, like in a cartoon where like the character would go into the gears and they would like slide through the gears, kind of like that. but just in the comic page, so it was pretty fun. Lockjaw makes it in a cameo, which I thought was funny. I love Lockjaw. This is another reason why I love this book. It's just fucking Lockjaw and his adorableness. And it's just a good superhero book. Sets up, it looks like it's setting up something. And apparently she's going on a date with Loki in the next issue, which should be fun. If you're not already reading Ms. Marvel, what are you doing? Just go read it. Go read it. You'll love it. If you're tired of the or depressing storylines, or you know, if you want something that's about a young superhero who's trying to find their way, Ms. Marvel's a great read. I love this book.
Yeah. You mean making a way in this world today takes everything you got?
I give Ms. Marvel number 11 a 4 out of 5. I'm really enjoying this book, and I hope it doesn't go away for Secret Wars. I want this book to remain forever on forever. I want it sticking around forever. I did not think I would like this book as much as I did, but there you go. I'm a Ms. Marvel fan. Brian, you're up next, buddy.
I am?
Yes.
Oh, boy. Okay. I picked up Ant-Man Prelude number 1, the MCU tie-in, or prologue, I should say, to the forthcoming Ant-Man film. As we know by this point, the film will focus on Scott Lang, but this series, the 2-issue limited series, focuses on Hank Pym. We meet him as he is working for S.H.I.E.L.D. R&D. This is back when there is an East and West Berlin, so keep that frame of mind. Hank Pym is an R&D researcher for S.H.I.E.L.D., and there comes up a situation in East Berlin where a supposed group of radical, political terrorists or what have you, whatever, shake an eight ball, coming up with a term for terrorists, I don't know. They got their piece in the hands of Hydra Tech, and Howard Stark bursts in, and he needs the suit so they can send in a covert op to retrieve the Hydra Tech from these radicals. And just as Hank and Howard Stark are about to come to blows over it, Peggy Carter arrives and intervenes, and she convinces Hank Pym to lend the suit. But it comes with a stipulation that he is the one who has to go into East Berlin, and because he doesn't want the particles or the tech in his suit getting into the hands of anybody else. He's very adamant about that. He doesn't want that happening. So he demands that he be the one who go into East Berlin to retrieve the Hydra Tech. And that's pretty much it for the first issue. Not a whole hell of a lot else happens. All the good stuff happens next issue, I guess. But a lot of setup, a lot of backstory.
None of the good shit happens for the next issue, and all the good shit happens in the movie.
Excuse you. I enjoy Howard Stark and Peggy Carter in this issue. And
Do they fondue?
They don't fondue. But they're both rocking gray hair at this point, and Peggy's...
Shouldn't Howard be dead at that point? Because Hydra...
Well, this is like back in, 88, 89, something like that?
Yeah, he should be dead. And Howard should...
I don't know when he died, but this is any time in the creation of East Berlin will pretty much be a frame of reference. So, admittedly, when the fuck? East Berlin came down in 89, I want to say. The Berlin Wall came down?
About that.
Yeah, 1989. So,
89, yeah.
Yeah, so East Berlin existed from 1949 to 1990. So, at any point in there, this could have happened.
Okay.
But they don't actually give a year of reference. So.
Oh, okay.
So he'll probably die after this, I guess, because, But I will say that Peggy is drawn beautifully. She's rocking the GILF look. Good for you, Peggy Carter.
Why is that? Really? You really?
Yeah, boy. It was more for Tasia's benefit than anybody else, because I know he likes that shit.
Hey, if we're talking Haley Atwell. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
all you need is a little bit of joy, you're good to go.
She is used as reference, dude, and she still fucking wears she still fucking is wearing the fucking outfit she wore in 1945. Nice. The brown suit coat and the skirt with the shirt puffed out and shit. It's funny as all hell. But, and also, for what he's given, I think Hank Pym is written very well in this comic. I mean, for what's there, and we'll get more next issue, obviously. But, overall, I enjoyed it. It's nothing really earth-shattering. In fact, it's really all just set up in backstory for the most part. Not a lot of what is supposed to happen happens here. But I like I said, I enjoyed it. So would I recommend it to you? No. Not unless you're a hardcore Ant-Man fan. Not unless you are A, a hardcore Ant-Man fan, and B, want more info going into the Ant-Man movie. Written by Will Corona Pilgrim, penciled by Miguel Sepulveda.
Say that last name again.
Sepulveda.
Say that last name again.
Sepulveda.
Okay.
Okay.
I just wanted to see if you say it three times.
Sepulveda. Fuck it. Yeah, fuck that. Yeah, 2.5 out of 5. There you go.
All right. I don't buy those books. That's not the first time Marvel's done them.
I don't either. But what interested me was that going into this movie, we know nothing about Hank Pym. So I wanted to at least get a little bit of what maybe his character would it be and what his past was. Because apparently he's the one who is referenced by Selvig in the first Thor movie. Everyone thought it was like Bruce Banner or whatever.
Wait, the Gamma Expert?
Yeah, it was Hank Pym.
Wait, what?
MCU's gone on record as saying that was referencing Hank Pym, not Bruce Banner.
Retcon, Taza, take it away.
Yeah, huge. Anyway.
It's fucking... who? No, it's Banner. Fuck it.
Well, gamma radiation could have given way to Pym particles. We don't know.
It says in the movie... unless the movie says it's not canon.
I bet you that book will be considered canon.
It probably is, and that's a shame. It's Who else did they write that stupid? So you're telling me... Hold on, I'm sorry. So you're telling me that in Thor, when Selvig is specifically talking about a scientist who was taken away by S.H.I.E.L.D.
No, he never said that.
He said something to that light.
He said... he worked with gamma ray technology or gamma technology or something like
and
that.
And he wasn't referring to... he heard of another scientist.
No, according to... I'm pretty sure it was Kevin Feige who went on record as saying it was Hank Pym he was referencing. Which makes more sense considering Selvig's age and the fact that he hasn't probably worked for S.H.I.E.L.D. in a while, if at all.
That doesn't mean he didn't know Banner. Okay, whatever.
Well, fine. It might have, because Banner was working with a university on the other side of the country, and when he went up in that gamma bomb, he disappeared from the public eye, so...
Can we all just say it was stupid and move on? I really think it's stupid.
I like how you laugh at your own joke while me and Iggy are trying to hash this out here.
No, you must not call me Iggy. I am the marvelous one. Taser, take it away.
Oh, overruled!
I am the marvelous one.
Okay,
only by your own decree.
Well, it is his show. Anyway, I will be reviewing Guardians of the Galaxy and X-Men, The Black Vortex Alpha, number one.
No, Taser, that's wrong. It's actually the African-American Vortex.
let me correct this away.
# Black History Month.
Guardians of the Galaxy and X-Men, The African-American Vortex Alpha, number one. Or Brand Nubian. Yeah, there we go. Brand Nubian Vortex. This follows in the heels of some mess going on in Guardians of the Galaxy proper, where apparently Quill had a bounty on his head and, you know, some guy named Hammer was after him. Knife, excuse me. Some guy named Knife was after him. His girlfriend didn't know that Kitty Pryde was his girlfriend, but here we are, and she, you know, accompanies him, and they find out that Knife is really his father, and his father had gotten his hands on some object of awesome power, and had also started doing some dealings with Thanos' son Thane, which is still such a awful idea, but whatever. And it picks up right after
the son, or the fact that his name is Thane.
Actually, both. Because I'm sorry, but Thane is a good guy from fucking Mass Effect 2.
Hell fucking yeah!
All right then. Hell, but also, yeah, just his son being named Thane is just lazy. You know, I think it sounds too similar, and it's dumb. You know, but whatever. So anyway, the two of them, they go creeping about trying to figure, you know, find out what is the Black Vortex. And what we find is it's a big mirror-looking thing that apparently shows you, I guess you'd say, a very hyper-idealized version of the viewer. You know, this backstory to this thing, and it shows, like, this planet a billion years ago. And, you know, these people trying to launch a rocket with this big, giant, not quite celestially, but it looks like, well, it looks like a celestial's little brother, you know, just kind of sitting there all out, just like, and they're trying to launch this rocket, and it gets up to a certain point, and it hits this invisible ceiling. And they're like, oh, no, we failed again, boo. And, you know, this one member of the race is there raging and screaming, and how could you do this? We just want you to love us, and why don't you let us go? We want to see the stars. And the creature responds, and it puts the mirror in front of her. And she looks in the mirror, and she sees, oh, pretty. So flash forward about a billion years, and we get Peter Quill is in trouble because him and Kitty have found this thing, and he puts out the call to both the Guardians of the Galaxy and the X-Men. Ileana goes and picks up, you know, like Storm and Beast and them back at the Professor's Mansion, and Quill calls the Guardians, and the Guardians are playing this freaking game of cards, and, you know, everybody goes, oh, okay, let's all go over and over and go help Peter Quill and Kitty get the thing. They got the thing. The
sounds
people
like a video
that
plot. Get the thing.
Kind of. Kind of.
That's lazy writing in form, if that's what you're doing.
He had this group of mercenaries called the Slaughter Squad. Yeah.
Wait. Okay, did somebody pay? Who's giving Rob Liefeld money to come up with names again?
You're not entirely wrong.
Well, you know, Will Smith hired him to ghostwrite After Earth. That's where Cypher Rage came from.
Well, and, you know, they're worried because apparently his father was going to take and have these people, you know, expose themselves or walk through or whatever to the mirror. And they showed what happens to one of them, and it's like one of those, like, say you put Woody Allen in front of the mirror and he ends up seeing Super Android Terminator, you know, that kind of boost. So, yeah, this isn't something you want to give a bunch of killers. So, yeah, Quill and Kitty stole it. They call in for help. Everybody shows up, and then it's kind of like, hey, everybody, let's stand around talking because we have to do character, you know, character blah and blah and blah, and it's more talking, and Storm looks at the thing, and, you know, it is actually a lot of talking. And just as they decide that, well, okay, maybe we should get going, and they try to have Hank, you know, give an explanation as to what this thing is and what it can do and why it should or shouldn't be broken or whatever, we should get it out of there. The squad shows up, and, you know, it's like, grrr, dog pile fight, grrr. Nobody gets hurt, but, you know, apparently the X-Men and the Guardians aren't really doing a whole lot against them. And, you know, one of the squad gets his hands on the mirror, and he's like, I got it, it's time to go, and whatever. And then he gets stabbed from behind, and it turns out he got stabbed by Gamora, who exposed herself to the mirror, and she's all, like, nebulous and dangerous. A kind of old-school Gamora, you know? This is the Gamora I know, not the one that's been running around with the eyes and shit.
It took this event to bring back the old school Gamora.
Yeah, you know, not the one with the eyes that look all hurtful and whatever the fuck. And
the flirty,
you know,
eyes, the
and relatable. There's another word I can't stand, you know, relatable. Yeah, this is kind of like old school Gamora. And you aren't going anywhere. And that's, you know, the last line of the book. To be continued in the next issue of Guardians of the Galaxy number 24. it's interesting. You know, the art is good. You know, I didn't have any real problems with the art. I should say that this was done by who is it? Art done by McGinnis and writing done by Sam Humphries, with Chris Anka as on additional pencils.
I love Chris.
Whatever that is. I don't really pay much attention to our care. But I don't know. I don't care. You know, if I was in the mood to follow Guardians of the Galaxy or the X-Men with the original X-Men, because they're in this, then, yeah, this might be a book that, you know, would kind of motivate me. But this book, being as it's the first, really is like the first book. I mean, nothing real has actually happened other than we've gotten the parties together. Now, next issue, then stuff happens. It's really just like not even the gun from the starters, not even the starter's pistol, the full sound has rung out. It's like the trigger has just been pulled.
Can I just ask a question really quickly?
Go ahead.
Was Cyclops in this issue? Young Cyclops?
He doesn't really say a whole lot.
Does he reunite with the X-Men?
Actually, no, he's not. No, he's not. Because he's still with his, I believe, still with his dad.
Yeah, because I know Cyclops is tying into this series later on. I didn't know if he showed up yet or not.
No, he hasn't. But X-23 is still there. Actually, there's a funny thing. You have X-23, Gamora, and I think Flash, and they're comparing blades. And you have Gamora saying sharp, X-23 sharper, and fucking Flash Thompson holding the blade, and he goes sharpest. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Who wrote this shit? But whatever.
Sam Humphries.
Yeah, right. Tell me about it.
Really. Tell me about it. I'm intrigued.
No, that's just really it.
let me know when Cyclops shows up, because I want to see him reunite.
Did his book get canceled?
Yeah, I think it did after like 4 or 5 issues.
Okay.
Sounds like that's what it was supposed to have done. I mean, he goes on a trip with Dad. Yay, Dad.
It's probably a plan.
Yay. Daddy.
Say, son? Yeah, Dad. Do you want to go space trucking with me? Yeah, Dad. That'd be great, Dad.
Too many workers. But it was actually good to see Carol and Hank, you know, together. It's like, oh, shit, yeah, they haven't been around for a long time. Oh, snap. But, this book wasn't anything special to me, mostly because I have the issues that I have with the current run of Guardians of the Galaxy. And I don't know. There's nothing here to hold me. You know, it wasn't bad by any means. It's just nothing here. Nothing here's going to hold me. You know,
that's okay, buddy.
I guess I won't trash it, but I can't really praise it. I'll say if you're a fan of all new X-Men or Guardians of the Galaxy, you'll probably like this. Especially if you like spacey stuff.
It's also a crossover that's going to cross over into this. Guardian. That's the one reason why I didn't want to read it, because it's not just all new X-Men Guardians, but also Star-Lord, and I think another book too, but I can't remember.
Yeah, I'm also not
Cyclops.
No, Cyclops, I don't think so. They've released the full checklist, but it's like, that's the only thing.
Oh, yeah. Guardians of the Galaxy, Black Vortex, Alpha One, Legendary Star-Lord, all new X-Men, Guardians Team-Up, Guardians of the Galaxy 25, Nova, Star-Lord, Cyclops 12, Captain Marvel, Star-Lord, and then Black Vortex, Omega One. Which means I will be missing most of this until it hits Nova. Because that's the only book here that I'm...
Stop titling the issues of series with Alpha and Omega? Can we stop
beginning and end?
No, I don't mind that. I think it's interesting for the bookend stuff.
Yeah,
It's just a nitpick on my part, but I think it's overdone. Yeah.
I am the Alpha and the Omega.
But is it really done that often?
I don't see it.
Yeah, they did it with X-Men, they did it with Hulk, they did it with X-Men again, actually, they did it twice.
This is beginning and end. It's just a cool way to say beginning and end.
Really?
That's all it is.
Just a nitpick. Like I said, I don't really care.
What you're saying is you hate the Greek alphabet. Just be honest.
Yes. Okay, I hate those damn Greeks.
Brian's still...
Of note, I will say this. on the last page where they have the checklist, it's interesting. They have an image. It has, Guardians of the Galaxy. They also have Cosmo, the Russian telepathic
dog. I love Cosmo.
They have Mantis.
Nice.
Warlock, which I thought was actually kind of cool because I always love Warlock. And they also have a Watcher, you know?
A Watcher?
A Watcher. Oh. I don't know if it's Uatu.
Well, he's dead, so it can't be him.
Oh, yeah.
And they have Howard the Duck.
Yeah.
And he's not, he's actually come not
sounding
son.
More like he looks different. Meredith's penguin
than you. What you're saying is you just confirmed my penguin role in the new Batman movie across Ben.
Yes, like, he is the controversial Latino recast of Oswald.
I would make an awesome penguin. Okay? Danny DeVito can suck it.
Okay.
I give it to
I
Kevin
don't have
Smith
anything for that.
David.
All right, enough penguin potential.
Oh, I'll give it a 3.3 warriors out of 5.
Okay. I'm glad I didn't buy it. Too many comics as it is. I don't need another freaking multi-part crossover. All right, well, let's go for one final segment. Once again, our counting down to our top 10 favorite Marvel stories of all time. Ooh. On our road to episode 200. So this is our number 7th pick, and for me, to me 7 and 8 were interchangeable just because of what they did for me in terms of liking comics as a long-term storytelling overtold over either a months or years in both cases. And to me, this one I picked. It's the least popular one. It's the least well known. And it's a shame because I think it was a really good run, but I am picking the Iron Man director of S.H.I.E.L.D. Now, just to give a little preface to this, you know, in case you are new to comics and you don't remember, like, wait a minute, Iron Man director of S.H.I.E.L.D. Basically, this was a fallout of Civil War in which Tony Stark was made into director of S.H.I.E.L.D. Maria Hill was supplanted for Tony. And you also had an Iron Man book coming out at the time. And sort of this book, you know, where every other book painted Tony as the bad guy, this book was the only one that where he wasn't that. And what I really liked about it was very, and again, I wasn't really big into my Iron Man reading experience at the time, but it was seeing Tony under the stress of being the leader of this spy organization and not knowing how to do everything, and how he wants to do things what he's always done. He also, you know, he's tried to improve S.H.I.E.L.D., but not everything works. And just see that sort of stress that falls on him. And in fact, he actually goes crazy for a point. There's a reference where Maria Hill and Dum Dum, who's in this, basically notice, like, when was the last time he took off the armor? Like, Tony is losing himself. In fact, he actually has a vision of Steve attacking him because he's just losing it because he can't figure out what this problem is. And I don't want to give it away because there's a villain, and the villain in this is a quintessential Iron Man villain, and it's a nice reveal on who it is. But it was in Tony is actually put on trial because they don't think he's fit to be S.H.I.E.L.D., the director of S.H.I.E.L.D. He actually uses his classic armor, from the not the bulky one, but like the one after that, with the roller skates. So he uses that and.
Wait! His armor had roller skates at one point?
Yes.
Holy shit! I had no idea.
Yeah, but it was just really cool to see this guy, this billionaire industrialist, be something he wasn't. And this was over the course of like 2 years as a run, all culminating in an awesome gigantic superhero versus super villain fight. You know, so it had twists and turns. Had some cameo appearances. Samson's actually in this too, which is the biggest dose I've seen of him in a while. And it was just a really different intro, different look at Tony Stark that wasn't just the typical, I'm a businessman, I'm going to deal with businessman threats, and what being a director of S.H.I.E.L.D. means when you're not normally part of that world. And, you know, what do you do? And it's a completely different supporting cast from the movies. Although one character from the movies, but she didn't play a big deal in Iron Man 3. So yeah, that and the art is like this really is like kind of, it's basically Alex Ross, but if Alex Ross could actually tell a sequential story from
who's Panther, the artist?
Robert De La Torre, he did a majority of issues. There's a couple of fill-ins, but the majority of the run is done by him, and it's beautiful. I loved it, and I miss his art every single day. That where he didn't do an issue. I think some where he's not working in comics anymore. I don't think I haven't seen anything he's done in a while, but when I reread this, and I was like, I was reminded why I love this particular run of Iron Man much more so than even Invincible Iron Man, the critically acclaimed Matt Fraction run, and this came right before that. And it kind of got lost in the shuffle once the promotion for Iron Man, because they said fuck this book and promoted Iron Man, the new one.
Yeah, that was when they started going back on everything they'd set up with Civil War.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I'll Iron Man Director's Shield, which if you want to know what numbers is, issues number 15 through 35. There you go. That is my number 7 pick, Iron Man Director's Shield. I really, really enjoyed that run of Iron Man, much more so than any other run I've seen in a while. Brian, take it away.
Ben, if going forward you could just keep your reviews kind of shorter, that would be great. I kid. Okay, so I flip-flopped a lot between this one and my number 6 pick, but I'll sort of try to justify each one. Number 7 is Mighty Thor: The Black Galaxy Saga for me, by Tom DeFalco and Ron Frantz.
Is what?
Mighty Thor: The Black Galaxy Saga.
Ah.
DeFalco and Friends.
Yes.
Okay, let me tell you a little something about this run on Mighty Thor, okay? Do you want Thor fighting interstellar threats? Yeah, you got that. Do you want humorous bits spliced with him about Hercules having lost his confidence, his power, and then him getting it back again? Yeah, it's got that. Do you want a compelling personal story where the man who is Thor is on the verge of losing his son in a bitter custody fight with his wife? Yeah, it's got that. Do you want a fucking space odyssey, an epic space journey of Thor swinging his hammer at Celestials and Celestials fighting what's his name? I forget. Taser.
High Evolutionary?
Thank you, High Evolutionary. I want to say Ultra Humanite, but that's another company. This story is admittedly a new one to me. I don't read a lot of old school stuff, but Taser turned me on to this. It has such variety, such authenticity in what it is about. You know, like, it balances this guy who is this channel for this cosmic entity who's fighting space battles and battling forces of nature out in the cosmos and watching galaxies die and, you know, be born again. And then you have this other guy who's divorced from his wife, has a son who loves him and looks up to him, and he's trying to make his life more amicable towards that while also balancing the responsibilities of being the fucking god of thunder. And yeah, Hercules is like a freeloader on his couch or whatever. And, you know, it's just the sheer variety of stuff in the story and the way it balances it all supremely well is something that I really love about this, as well as the stuff where it's Thor battling in the Black Galaxy against the Celestials, and you see a galaxy die and born again, and the High Evolutionary is there doing his thing. You know, he always has his same shtick in mind. But even with all of that, it just proved to be really entertaining, and at the same time, very heartfelt from the alter ego side of things. But ultimately, this series, to me, is probably one of, if not my favorite Thor story. I mean, just because, yes, when Thor is Thor, you get some really cool adventures and stuff like that happening, which I'm sure Taser will take us to later. But not a lot is said about, is it Kevin Masterson or Eric Masterson? I'm trying to think of whatever.
Eric Masterson.
Yeah, Eric Masterson, thank you. Not a lot is said of Eric Masterson's time as Thor. You know, it's. I think Frog Thor gets more of a spotlight than Eric Masterson gets, just because I think he became Thunderstrike at one point, and that kind of, you know, eh. But this right here, where he is actually, you know, this is where he's Thor, is just, it's a brilliant piece of storytelling, and it does it so well, because you can go from this guy fighting with his ex-wife over custody of his son to Thor battling Celestials in a galaxy far, far away, and you don't question it for a second. They tell it with such conviction. And it's talent. It's talent too. DeFalco and Friends do great on this. Friends draws this galaxy and all these out there space threats just beautifully. And DeFalco does a great job of writing this issue, this series. It's fantastic. If there's anybody out there who wants to dig a little more of old school Thor, I highly recommend this. Co-signed by Taser, Mighty Thor: The Black Galaxy Saga by Tom DeFalco and a lot of friends. I guarantee you'll love it if you're a Thor fan. Number 7 for me, top 10 Marvel story of all time.
Meh. Taser, take it away.
Meh? You, sir, suck.
Taser, come back with the Simon suit. Come on.
Well, I'm going to go for 2 for Thor. My pick for top 10 Marvel books, at least from what I can recall, because I read a lot and, you know, I forgot a lot. So for the shit that I can recall, I chose...
He's forgotten more about comics than he'll ever know.
Well, put it this way. He, you know, Iggy told us what he wanted to, you know, what was allowable. And there's surprisingly a lot of Marvel books that don't make the cut because, you know, it's not Marvel Universe specific, you know. But, you know, that's another discussion for another day. My pick is Thor 360 to 362. The Hunt for Odin's Soul. Long story short, there was the big Ragnarok fight that occurred, you know, with Surtur and everybody else. You know, the big Simonson magnum opus that, you know, resulted in the death of Odin. And, you know, a lot of the Asgardians had gotten stuck on Earth because Bifrost had been broken. So here we have, you know, efforts to take and bring these guys home. And in so doing, Thor, you know, rallies up the Anhariar. And I had to look that up because I didn't know how to pronounce that word. But it's Anhariar. And they decide to take and, you know, go down to Hell to rescue the souls of the mortals who were tricked into eating, like, fairy food. And, you know, upon doing so, Hela stole their souls for whatever. I forgot what the reason was. So, you know, Thor, because Midgard is just, you know, is under his purview, is going to go down there and he's going to get these souls. And if he can do so, he's going to find his daddy. So he leaves out and, you know, he gathers basically everybody except for the Warriors 3, because they weren't there, oddly enough. But he does take Balder with him, and he does take Scourge. So they go on this, you know, big epic traveling route. You know, they go by Garm, and then they go towards this bridge held by Mordud. I'm not sure if I actually pronounced that one correctly, but, you know, she guards the bridge that leads into Hela's realm, and, you know, they end up in this vast field, and it's like the Anhariar, they see all their loved ones, and, you know, it turns out to be a trap, and, you know, Thor finds Hela, and he challenges her to a fight, you know, over Odin's soul and the souls of the mortals, and they get into this big, I mean, we're talking knockout, drag him out fight. And Thor's kind of catching the bad end of it. She ends up, you know, scarring him, which lasts a long time in the book. She really, like, if you thought Aquaman, when he got, you know, was wearing the beard because he got his face messed up, if you thought that was bad, no, Thor got fucked up. But Thor manages, you know, to pull out a win. And he promises her, like, safe passage, and he can take the souls and whatever, blah, 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 blah. But along the way, she lets Thor know that Scourge is still sticking around, and Scourge is like, no, I don't want to leave here because, you know, the Entrancers is here, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and, you know, Thor reveals, or rather it's revealed to him that it's not the Enchantress that's been with him, but somebody else. And Scourge has had a thing for the Enchantress for a very long time. As a matter of fact, when they came back from Midgard, Scourge looked her up, and she was there trying to, you know, hug all up on Heimdall. And she goes, no, hold on, baby. Wait here 1 second. Scourge, come follow me. And she leads one, and then she kind of freezes him in place and then leaves him there and goes back to Heimdall. So Scourge is here because he's, like, hurt. You know, he's pissed. And, you know, he just wants to throw himself into a fight. And, you know, if I can't have a love, then at least I'm going to just be a warrior. So they managed to get the souls of the mortals, and they're back getting out of Dodge. And Hela, she, you know... Okay, that's not me. She takes and she, you know, starts bragging about, you know, how she's going to do this, that, and whatever. And Scourge is pissed off because Hela had played this trick on him. So he takes and he breaks apart this ship that her and her forces were going to use at the true Ragnarok. That was like the nails of, I mean, it was a big, big boat made out of the nails of living people. And he breaks it, which enrages her. And she calls up all of the denizens of the dead that Thor and Baldur and everybody else had sent down there. We're talking not even a legion. We're talking almost a nation of people. And she, you know, she's like, screw it. I don't care. I made a deal with you, but fuck it. I'm going to stop you. You know, you can't leave because I said so. I'm Hela, whatever. And Thor is like, you know, F all of this. And he pulls out the hammer, you know, big show of power. And they power through and they're running for Dodge. They're trying to get the hell out, you know. And they manage to get some headway, but they get into a point where they have to cross the bridge, and the bridge is really narrow. So, you know, their progress will be slowed up. And Thor tells Baldur to take everybody and to keep going, and he'll hold the line. And this is why I choose this part, chose the story. Scourge knocks Thor out, and he hands him over, and everybody's like, oh no, it's the traitor. Look what he did. He knocked out Thor. How could he? And he goes over to Baldur, and he tells him, you know, there's no way that, you know, that you're going to make it out. I'll hold the line. You take Thor. You get everybody, and you get out. I'll hold it here. Give me the ammo, because while they were on Earth, they managed to take some, like, military-grade ordnance, like M16s or whatever, and they brought it back with them. So when they fought the army, you actually see, like, Asgardians with, like, M16s and rocket launchers. It's fucking awesome. God bless Walt Simonson's art. And that's what he does. Everybody breaks out, and he holds the line at that bridge. And the reason why I like Simonson, aside from his art, Walt Simonson knows how to tell a story. Walt Simonson used narration to go along with the dialogue. It's not just dialogue. He tells a story, you know? I mean, we're talking, you get pathos and feels from...
Feels?
Feels.
Oh my God.
You get feels from it.
Hashtag dim feels.
Yes. It's a lost art, because nobody does narration in comics anymore. Nobody. You know, it's just all, you know, dialogue, and maybe some action. But it's romantic. You know, not like love romantic, but, you know, battle and fighting, you know, heroic. It's that type of romance.
Gods of old.
Yes. And there's none like it now, and I miss this. And Walt Simonson is one of the last few people who knows how to tell a story. And the few pages that he uses to tell the story of Scourge holding the line and not making it through, but he held the line, you know, that's powerful. You know, there's nothing like it. I will go on record as saying that Scourge's death is the best heroic death I have ever read.
The last stand of the executioner is epic.
It is. It really is. And, you know, I mean, everybody else gets out and, you know, Thor, you know, goes on to do other stuff. It's a great run. He ends up finding his father because his father wasn't down there in hell. But, no, the death of Scourge, you know, that's powerful. That's one of the, this is one of the books that affected me as a kid. This is why I like the stories that I like now, you know, not stuff where it's a whole lot of, you know, dialogue between characters, but tales of heroism, you know, I don't even want to say action. I'm just, they do stuff, you know, something that makes you go, whoa. So, yeah, my choice for number 7, Thor 360 to 362, Death of Scourge.
There we go, ladies and gentlemen.
That's only number 7.
It's only number 7.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, that'll do it for this episode of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast, the countdown to number episode number 200 looms ever near. We are anticipating full breakdown superstars for it. I'm just kidding. Please
maybe,
go.
Maybe Johnny D will show up. I don't even know.
Head over. if you could do me a favor, head over to marvelousiggy.wordpress.com where you can check out my latest review on the remastered version of Bayonetta 1. And by the time this episode is out, you can also check out the very controversial sequel, Bayonetta 2. So check that out. And also,
why is it controversial?
Because reasons.
No. Say, find out in my review of Bayonetta 2.
Well, I don't talk about it, so.
Oh. You suck, then.
No, I think I do. Did I? Yeah, no, I did because it's exclusive to the Wii U and people got mad about that.
Oh.
And also because Bayonetta shows her tits a lot. Not shows her tits, but is very, very TNA oriented.
Mm. Well, doesn't that just make it like a teen oriented title or mature?
No, it's mature, but people like have a problem with it. Some people have a problem with it because of that. Despite that, if they look, they're just looking at one context versus the whole game is over the top. Like the whole point of that is crazy. And that despite that she is sexually provocative doesn't mean she's less of a woman. In fact, she's the best character in the whole fucking thing. She don't take shit from anybody. And she owns it, and I love it about her. Either way, go check out my...
She owns some tits.
Go, well, tits, ass, legs, hair.
All right, tits everything. And ass and legs. I like it even better.
Everything. Please go check out my review on Bayonetta 1, and then by the time this episode goes out, my review for Bayonetta 2 will be out as well. So please go check those out. They're really great fucking games. And also, head over to thegreenlanterncorps.com where you can check out my reviews on the Green Lantern Corps 3 core books, as well as the Earth 2 weekly event, and also Multiversity. So please go check those out. I greatly appreciate that. Anything else to say, guys, before we pack it up and go?
Yeah. Get low when the whistle blow.
B-Rye?
Save me from the snow. Send help. Send help.
Oh,
please.
And John John's internet sucks.
We'll see y'all next week. Have a good week, everybody. Happy President's Day. Wait, that's next week.
Bye-bye.
Happy Black History Month.